right on Prime. Breaking news.
Casey, the COVID-19 epidemic has changed the way we go about many of the most basic tasks in medicine. We are all aware of the severity of this disease, and we're doing, of course, all we can to keep our patients healthy. And the news, though, is full of the desperate need for more ventilators and specialist intensive care. However, there are some patients for whom intensive care is likely not appropriate or within their goals of care. So what is the best way to approach a goals of care discussion in this new reality?
Yeah, it's really tricky, Vanessa. And as family doctors, we can certainly play a role in the planning and decision making for our elderly patients, as well as those who have life-limiting or terminal illnesses. All of the data that we've seen so far shows that while COVID can affect pretty much anyone, it tends to be more severe and more complicated in the older people, as well as those with underlying illnesses. We may have seen a few years of mortality get condensed down into just a few months this year. And as family doctors, we have a unique opportunity right now. This is the time to be proactive and initiate discussions with patients and their families about their wishes should they become unwell. Doctors from parts of the world that are already hit hard by the COVID virus are telling us that we should be doing this and doing this right now.
Yeah, this conversation is much, much better to have now before the patients start getting really sick. It might be a little bit late in some of the bigger centers where it's already hitting, like in New York and other places, but it's really important that we tackle this because it's really difficult to make these decisions in the middle of the night in an understaffed, busy emergency department with an unknown clinician. As the family doctor, you're really in the best place to help your patients and their families make decisions about their care. Take the time now before patients are so sick and before the resources are totally swamped.
Yeah, I know, Vanessa, that you like to ask yourself, would I be surprised if my patient were to die in the next year? As a way of sort of identifying who out there might benefit from initiating one of those end-of-life discussions in the clinic. And this principle still holds true, perhaps now more than ever.
Yeah, for sure. I sort of always go back to that question. And now there's actually maybe a little added question that I would throw on at the end there. And it would be sort of, would I actually be surprised if this patient were to develop complications or serious illness from the coronavirus? So that's another sort of little twist for this new pandemic era.
For sure. Now, to help us answer that question, let's look at some of the statistics that have come out of parts of the world where this virus has already affected. There's a huge Chinese study of 70,000 patients, which showed that about 5% of COVID-positive patients required intensive care level care. The majority of these needed mechanical ventilation. Of patients that were admitted to hospital, the mortality was between 28 and 61%, depending on which trial you read. And for the critically ill, i.e. those on mechanical ventilation, the mortality was somewhere in the 80 to 97% range, which is ridiculously high. From the case reports out of New York City and New Orleans in America, the 81% of patients seem to have mild symptoms, 14% have severe symptoms, which require them to be hospitalized, and 5% end up in intensive care. So similar to the Chinese studies. And I think importantly, there was one study, small study out of China, that showed that patients who had an active cancer diagnosis at the time of their diagnosis were at a much higher risk of requiring ventilation and dying in intensive care. So these patients are going to do pretty poorly, and that doesn't sound very good at all.
No, it certainly doesn't. And I think something that's good to point out is that, you know, there's some concern about some of the information coming out of China. Maybe it was not well represented. Maybe there's more cases that we know about. But that sort of 5% critically ill, that statistic seems to be holding based on stats that are coming out as the wave sort of goes across Europe and comes to North America. There are some variations, but it does still seem that around sort of 5 to 8% of people get critically ill with this disease.
And we need to be upfront with our patients about this. Of course, new stats will be coming along as we get more experience, and we hope that they're better in the future and happier news. But based on the trends we've seen in New York and Spain and Italy, I fear that we're still seeing very high mortality rates for the patients who are sick to begin with, and particularly those that go on to require mechanical ventilation.
So if you're looking for some suggestions on how best to broach these topics, we have two great resources for you, because these aren't easy conversations to have. I mean, end-of-life care discussions can be complicated at the best of times, but when you're throwing in the added stress of, you know, maybe entire family members are going to come down with this disease, plus the resource allocation, it's really difficult. So sort of watching other people go through this or having ideas about what to say can be helpful. So one is actually a video of a family doctor going through different examples of conversations about COVID and the impact on goals of care and resources. And then the other is a website called vitaltalk.org, and we'll put links to both of these in the show notes. And the vitaltalk.org offers a guide for communication during the pandemic. It even has a special section that gets into the extremely difficult conversations about resource allocation. In other words, how we explain to patients or their families that we might not be able to offer them advanced care simply because we lack the resources to do so.
Yeah, those are really useful. Thanks for sending those, Vanessa. The other big concept that we need to consider when we're having these end-of-life planning discussions in this time of COVID is the potential for isolation of the patient from their family in their final days. Now, most hospitals are quite wisely limiting the ability of families to visit their loved ones in order to try and flatten the exposure curve. In fact, many hospitals are simply not allowing visitors at all, even when a patient is near death. This is clearly unbearably hard for patients and their families, and it is also taking its toll on the healthcare workers, who are now trying to act as family stand-ins, holding a patient's hand, sitting by their bedside, and simply being present in a way that their families are not able to do. Now, some well-off places are able to set up mobile phone and tablet devices so that they can have visual communication and use platforms such as Skype, for example, with the outside world. And this is great for troubleshooting and maybe good for having conversations around decision-making, but it certainly doesn't replace the loving touch of a hand on a shoulder at that moment. So it's good, but not perfect.
So if they're confronted with these choices and these, you know, ideas of being in the hospital by themselves, they might think to themselves and suggest to you that if they get sick with this, they don't need to be kept in the hospital, but can actually be sent home to die. And before COVID took over our lives, and if local resources were available, then this was certainly an ideal option. But this model might soon also be a victim of the pandemic. As hospitals and acute care centers see their staff members falling ill or even dying, or simply burning out from the intensity of the work, all of these different systems are going to be looking for replacement workers. Home care nurses and home care workers could quickly be drafted to help in the tertiary care centers, so our home care system might fall apart pretty rapidly.
Yeah, that raises the other issue of safety for healthcare workers when doing these home care visits. As community spread becomes more evident, it will be likely that at some point it will be assumed that all members of the home population present a risk of COVID exposure, and therefore full PPE will need to be worn for a visit from any healthcare team member. This is not a small issue, as the whole process of donning and doffing PPE can add an extra 20 to 30 minutes to a simple visit, and this means that healthcare providers should not go from one house to the next without cleaning their equipment thoroughly, well above and beyond what we are taught when we get our new PPE each time. And I don't know about you, Vanessa, but we doctors were not great at that sort of stuff historically.
Yeah, and we tend to rush things, and you need a buddy to do it with you, and it's unlikely that you're going to bring an extra home care worker with you when you go to a patient's home, so you might be using a family member who aren't used to the donning and doffing of PPE, so there's all these extra levels of complexity. And then, of course, there's the issue about the family members and the risk to them if the patient is COVID positive. The patient's going to have to be kept in isolation within the home. Only one family member at a time should be providing their care, and those caregivers themselves will ideally be wearing full PPE. This will add massive expense and complication to a system that is already strapped for resources, and it is going to place much greater demands on caregivers in the home who are already probably stressed out because the entire family's at home, the kids aren't in school. There's a lot going on, so we have a lot of extra stress that we are piling onto the families.
Yeah, so all of this is to say that we really need to be upfront about our patients about all of these possibilities. Be clear about the services available in your area right now, and be clear that these resources may become limited in the near future. Only by giving your patients and their families all this information we have, in a clear and understandable way, can we truly say that we've done our due diligence in preparing them for these end-of-life discussions in this age of COVID-19.
Thanks so much for this, Casey. And to everyone out there, please stay safe and remember, keep doing what you do, because what you do matters.